This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Caller number 10 right now this second at 800-636-1067. You'll win two tickets to Post Malone with Jelly Roll, the Big Ass Stadium Tour, Monday, June 2nd at Northwest Stadium. Tickets are on sale now. For tickets and more event information, visit thefandc.com/events. You know, because it's 4 o'clock and because of that music, it's time for the Beltway Blitz. We'll spin you around. What's going on in the realm of DC sports? We'll start on the diamond, please. Our guy, Charlie Slow's voice of the Nats right here on the Beltway Blitz. Charlie, tale of two games, game number one against against Seattle. They couldn't have hit water if they fell out of a boat. Last night, they couldn't stop hitting. That was a fun one.
Yeah. You never know what you're going to see when you come to the park, and you'd think that it's always going to come down to what kind of day the starting pitching had. And, you know, in game one of the series, Logan Evans, the Nats couldn't touch him other than Wood's home run. And lo and behold, after 88 pitches and allowing a run on four hits, he got sent down to the minor leagues after the game by the Mariners.
Yeah.
But yesterday, Trevor Williams was the beneficiary of two back-to-back home runs, solo homers by Garcia and Josh Bell in the second, got to pitch with a lead. And probably was his finest outing of the year, finest outing in a long time. Just three hits. They never really threatened. They had a runner at second, a runner to second. Just once got to third in the sixth inning. It was an easy night for him. He even had a runner caught stealing, 77 pitches in six innings. But the offense was a big story. I mean, another titanic home run for Wood in the fifth inning, 435 feet after the longest of his career the night before at 448. This one he pulled, not one of these line drives. This one was way up in the air, a majestic home run. He had a two-run double in the eighth inning. You also had Robert Hassel with three hits in the game and drove in two runs. His last hit was his first major league home run. But Josh Bell, we mentioned his solo homer. He had not had a multi-hit game yet this year, and he had a home run and two singles and another ball caught at the fence. So if he's about to get hot, and we know when he gets hot, it lasts for a while. Maybe last night was the start.
Charlie, you guys have had some great calls of James Wood homers this year. One of my favorite things to do as well is after listening to you guys and hearing how you guys describe it is go into the opposing team's broadcast to see how they feel the first time they see James Wood. And last night, hearing the Mariners broadcasters talk about that home run last night, what's it like calling his home runs and seeing him as a first full-time around the bigs now, seeing him be able to do what he's done this season?
It's really incredible. Even going back to last year, hitting all the home runs the opposite way. You guys were in spring training when he hit that low line drive to left field.
Yep.
Didn't look like it could possibly look like it went through the fence. I mean, he didn't think it would get over. So, I mean, he hits it every type of way and everything seems to be hit hard. And he's figuring out now when they pitch him in how to turn on a ball and pull it with more regularity. It's pretty scary because if you thought you could pitch him in and that would, you know, not let him get his arms extended to hit the ball up the middle and the other way, good luck now.
Charlie, how big a deal was that start for Trevor Williams, who'd been scuffling a little bit, kind of coming into that one, not used to seeing him go past, get through the fifth inning, let alone six full, zero earned runs, only three hits, three base runners allowed. He was tremendous. How big a deal was that for him?
I haven't talked to him yet about it, but I'm sure, he felt great. Davey said after the game, felt the difference was he wasn't trying to get swings and misses. He was just trying to execute his pitches and throw strikes because walks and hit batters had become a problem. Just a lot of base runners in all of his starts. There were three balls that were hit deep. They were all caught. It is a pitcher's park. It's hard to hit home runs there. The Mariners will tell you that. They're a much better offensive team on the road than they are at home. But again, he needed a game like that. And, other than those three fly balls, nothing was really hit hard against him. And he did get swings and misses. He got a lot of called strikes. It was certainly his best game of the year. And he probably could have pitched more than 77 pitches over six innings. But I think they were, thanks very much at that point.
What have you made of Mackenzie Gore this season? It feels like he's always shown that he's had that. He's had this kind of stuff to be able to strike out guys like he has this season, but maybe the mentality wasn't there or he wasn't able to be as consistent. Feels like for the most part this year he's been pretty consistent, even if he's not going into the seventh, giving you at least six innings. What have you made of Gore's start this year?
Yeah, you know, I think he's been unlucky at times with bad results on good pitches. Maybe, you know, he's the best 2-5 pitcher in baseball right now, leading the major leagues in strikeouts with 93 and 62 in the third. That's an amazing ratio. He's given up less hits than he's pitched. The walks are better. He stayed out of the 30-pitch innings. He's given up just 8 home runs, .246 average against him. You know, sometimes you're just unlucky, particularly that game in Baltimore where he struck out a ton, and then every time the ball was put into play, something bad happened where it turned into a hit. So, you know, you hope that you have some innings like Jake Irvin did in his last start where he didn't strike out a bunch, but he got a lot of, you know, early outs on the low pitch count. You know, he could use a game like that also, like similar to what Trevor Williams had last night. So, you know, I look forward to every time he pitches. You know, he's probably, with stuff-wise, the closest thing we've seen since Max Scherzer was here.
Charlie, you mentioned unlucky. I feel like nobody's been unluckier, maybe Dylan Cruz is the exception, than Luis Garcia. His batting average on balls in play is sub 240. All the metrics are good. His hard hit percentage is the highest of his career. Strikeout percentages among the lowest. Feels like he constantly either is getting robbed or hitting the ball to the warning track or whatever. Just terrible luck for Luis Garcia. It was good to see him get one last night.
Yeah, I mean, he's had, I think, more outfielders make great catches on him. I mean, the game one of the series, he hit two balls a ton to right center field. And Leody Taveras, who's a center fielder playing right field, ran both of them down deep in the gap. I finally said to him after the game, got back to the hotel last night, you finally hit one he couldn't get to because it landed over the wall. He's like, it's unbelievable. Then he had a ball hit to center field, and Rodriguez made a sliding catch on a ball he hit in the fifth inning. So, yeah, I would say, you know, he should have better than a .233 average and more production than he has. But, you know, as long as he keeps swinging, trying to take the ball up the middle, not trying to pull everything. And then, of course, you know, the best thing this year for him, besides the bad luck offensively, has been the best year he's ever had in the field defensively. No question.
Charlie, thank you as always, man. We'll talk soon.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
See you, my friend. There he goes. Hit that Wizards/NBA sounder, please.
Joining us now from Monumental is Chase Hughes. Chase, we see the Oklahoma City Thunder advance to the NBA Finals last night. The Wizards bring a guy over from that organization just a little time ago with Will Dawkins. Do you think we're going to be able to see this team maybe try to take some of that blueprint that they've built there and maybe apply it here?
I think some of it. I mean, it's a difficult plan to replicate because their recent rebuild began with an MVP and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. You know, yeah. They made the decision to trade Paul George, got what we thought at the time was a great haul. Little did we know the player that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander would become, you know, an MVP, and he's only, what, 25, 26. He could go on to have a career that puts him amongst the all-time greats. So that's going to be tough to replicate. And, you know, Sam Presti is a terrific talent evaluator. I think if he gets a ring this year, he's going to have an argument as one of the best in all of sports, not just in the NBA. But I think what is going to sort of carry over from the Thunder is just a general philosophy. You know, they play fast. Defense is really important. Positional size is really important. And the Thunder, you know, it's a little bit different because they have SGA running the show, but they like to run five-man lineups out there with five different guys who can dribble, pass, and shoot. And you see that with Chet Holmgren, his versatility. And I think the Wizards are trying to recreate that with their five-man lineups, and Alex Saar would be the guy who could kind of do some Chet Holmgren-like things as a big man.
What is Will Dawkins specifically? He was in some of those rooms when they're finding guys like Lucas Dort, Chet Holmgren, and company. What sort of things has he tried to bring and kind of, I don't know, establish here in Washington of this is how we find those guys. This is how we teach them to play. This is the system that we want to run, et cetera. What have you seen kind of that similar a thread between the two orgs?
Well, in terms of scouting, I think just casting a really wide net, you know, Will Dawkins over the years, I think he rose through the Oklahoma City front office in part because, you know, he was willing to go on long scouting trips in Europe, go to Australia, go to Africa, go wherever he had to go. And I think in the past, the Wizards, you know, didn't have the type of scouting personnel that they now have. They have a much bigger front office in a lot of different respects. But I think the one thing that has really been felt that's more tangible than that is the way they treat the players. You know, Oklahoma City has a great reputation as being one of the best teams, not just in the NBA, but in sports, in terms of how they treat the players and their families and how detail-oriented they are with the sort of goals that they give their players and the communication that they have, how direct they are with what they want to see from those players in terms of how they improve. And I've heard the same feedback from Wizards players and agents, and the reputation for the Wizards has really improved around the league since Will Dawkins and Michael Winger took over, because both of those guys came from Oklahoma City and they saw the power of treating players like that and essentially putting them first in every single aspect, and how that can pay off in the long run when, you know, word gets out around the league and players who are making decisions in free agency and where they want to go in trades, that stuff gets factored in.
Something we kicked around the other day when David Aldridge was home with Doc the other day on Memorial Day, and he had brought up the idea of the way that they protect Chet Holmgren and OKC with an Isaiah Hartenstein on the defensive end could maybe interest DC in drafting Maluwach out of Duke at the sixth pick to kind of help out Sar. What are your thoughts on that?
I definitely think it's a possibility. I mean, at first blush, it's like, oh, well, they just drafted Alex Sar. They don't necessarily need another big man, especially one whose rim protection is his best trait. But they are kind of a little bit different. Now that we've seen Alex Sar play a full NBA season, it's very clear that he's more comfortable on the perimeter than he is around the rim, at least on the offensive end. And so if you got Kaman Maluwach, you'd have a guy who can set screens, can roll to the rim, can catch lobs, can finish around the basket, and then that would free Alex Sar up to play on the perimeter. And then defensively, it would also free Alex Sar up to be more of a roaming defensive player who can switch on to smaller guys. But as a rim protection duo, I mean, that could end up being one of the best in the league, kind of like an Evan Mobley and Jared Allen that we see in Cleveland. So I think it does make some sense. And, you know, I think they could play together, especially if Alex Sar's shooting touch improves. And if you talk to people who have seen Kaman Maluwach play over the years, they insist that he can also knock it down from three. And apparently he has been really impressing in workouts and at his pro day as an outside shooter. You didn't see that at Duke last year. I don't think he attempted more than like two or three shots from 3-point range, but they didn't need him to do that. But I think long-term there is upside for him to be a guy who can also stretch the floor.
Chase, thank you as always, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Absolutely. You too.
There he goes. That is our boy, Chase Hughes. Local 53, please, Darius. Our guy Michael Phillips, the Richmonder, Odyssey Richmond, to break down the football boys. Miguel, what do you make of the guys not at OTAs? McLaurin, Lattimore, Tunsil.
Well, it's pretty easy for McLaurin. We've done this before, and he's been just fine, and he came out of it last time with the new contract, and I think this time he'll come out of it with a new contract. So zero worries there. You know, he's been there for the first two of the three sessions, the off-field stuff. I don't think anybody would doubt he has a great relationship and rapport with Jaden Daniels. Zero worries there. Tunsil has done this his whole career. He kind of doesn't come to these things. Conceptually, it's not really necessary for an offensive lineman to be at these things. They don't do a ton of important, you know, install and in the trenches work. The coaches, I'm sure, would rather have him than not. It's not the best look when you're on your third team and you're a star offensive lineman to sit them out. It's a nothing long term. Like, would you rather have him there than not, just for the message it sends? Yeah, it says maybe you got a little work on the brotherhood thing with him when you do get him in the building. But on the whole, he'll be fine. You know, they brought him in to do something. He's going to do that thing this fall. Which brings us to the third one, right? Lattimore is an interesting one because I'm not sold that Lattimore makes it out of training camp yet. I think it's a very real possibility they kick the tires here and say, not good enough. Now, there may be injury rehab work that we're not aware of that's going on behind the scenes. That feels possible. But on the whole, you'd say he's the one with the most to lose slash maybe losing the most by not participating in this.
Do you think that the moves they made were in potential that they weren't believers in Lattimore, bringing in a Jonathan Jones? It sounds like they wanted Amos anyways, but they draft him in the second round. Do you think those sorts of moves were, hey, if Lattimore doesn't work out, we still feel good? Or was it still, hey, Lattimore's our guy and we're just bolstering the secondary?
Whatever they say, they can't possibly feel 100% compelled that he's the guy, right? You give him the confidence, you know, you give him that boost of, you know, whatever they need to say. Yeah, he's our guy. He's our starter. We believe in him. All those press conference things. But I don't see how you could possibly, as a responsible general manager, and I think at this point there is a responsible general manager in town, I don't think any responsible GM would say, well, no need to do anything there. We've got Marshawn Lattimore in 2025. You know, whatever they say, there's some work to be done there, and there's some proving that needs to be done on Lattimore's part, which gets back to the original point of he's not guaranteed anything no matter what they say here.
Put you on the spot here, Michael. Give me a player on offense and a player on defense that you think kind of has a breakout, someone we're not necessarily considering as maybe a viable option or something big time for them that actually steps up and plays really well.
Man, I'd love for it to be Ben Sinnott. I'm not calling my shot that I think it will be Ben Sinnott. I really want it to be Ben Sinnott. I think that solves a lot of problems for you with Zach Ertz. You know, you can't count on him to do 2, 3, 4 more seasons here. You know, the Jaden Daniels rookie contract window, right? But to win in that window, you're going to need a really good tight end. You've got one right now in Ertz. Is Sinnott one? We didn't see any flashes of it last year. Doesn't mean he's not. We've seen guys come along, be late bloomers, year two, year three in the league. But, man, it sure solves a lot of problems because there just aren't a ton of those guys available in free agency, available by trade. You almost have to go use a high draft pick to go get a Brock Bowers, get a guy who's going to come in and be that. So, man, it sure solve a lot of problems if they could find one. On the defensive side, I'm waiting for one of these linebackers, right? And I don't know which one it'll be, but Bobby Wagner's not going to play 100% of the snaps. That just feels like a bad idea. I don't think it's going to go down that way. There are snaps available at linebacker. And the fact that, you know, most people probably couldn't name who's going to take those snaps tells me whoever steps in is going to be an unsung guy.
Michael, thank you as always, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Take care, guys.
We will see you. There he goes. That's how we Beltway Blitz. That's how you do it. You pick three different teams or sports, and you talk about them in little 5 to 6 minute bursts. A couple questions, and you move on. That's the Beltway Blitz, people. You heard that question of Michael Phillips. I want to tackle that with my guy Tobes next. Breakout on offense and defense. We'll also do disappointment on offense and defense. Somebody that might have a down year. We'll talk about a couple breakouts, a couple disappointments with the Local 53. We'll do that next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
G&D here on the Fan. No GP, but yes, Toby's hanging out with us. This is Grant and Danny. What are you doing to protect your family's assets? As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Condori and Morod can help you draft your last will and testament, set up a living trust, or put together a medical power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. We love those guys. We have plenty of good sports content coming your way here in a moment. Well, we got to update. Ryan, what happened during the commercial break here? This looks like a brand new unit over here, this camera that's looking at me.
So,
and now I look different on the stream.
Yeah. I thought we had the fix there. We actually got a new camera in here. And as I just found out as we got back in, for whatever reason, this camera looks smaller on the stream.
And I like Mini Danny.
Yeah, it's less of me, which is usually good. It's both the camera and my body weight add pounds.
Yeah.
So this makes me look a little bit less, which is, I guess, nice.
You look very slim and trim
Thank you, Jobs.
Profile, I see.
It's just a smaller version of me. And you can go to the YouTube page and find us right there. 106.7 The Fan. We're broadcasting live all over the world on the YouTubes. But it feels Like, I've been diminished a little bit. Doesn't it, Topes?
What is that movie, Downsizing or whatever? That's what happened here. Downsized.
You got like a little Marie Kondo over here. I got thrown away.
Honey, I Shrunk the Danny.
Yeah, it feels a little smaller. Oh, whoa, whoa.
Well, now he's whoa. Too large.
Now I'm zoomed in? What are you doing over there? There we go. Yeah. That's how you get back on Lou's good side to get yourself promoted. Yes. That's what you do.
One
thing about Ryan that we knew, like when he got hired to do this position, he's very tech savvy.
Very tech savvy.
So that's something that was always going to work in his favor, is he's very good with technology.
Yes, he is. I've seen him plug in, unplug and plug back in a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Genius.
Very good. I couldn't do it.
Who could? You know, you don't just walk into a position like that. You got to get trained, man.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go through a lot of extra schooling to rise that corporate
ladder.
Lots
of meetings.
So many meetings. And sometimes you go to a meeting and you're late for the meeting and you blame it on one of the people that's in the meeting already. And now it's only me on the camera, not Toby. What are you doing over there, dude?
I'm trying to figure this thing out.
You got to not touch it for a second.
I know.
Just, and also, I'm not trying to do a bit. It's actually really distracting. I'm zooming in and out and stuff like that. I have to do the show. What we're going to talk about? Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. I asked Michael Phillips this question, and I want you guys in on the phones as well. 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. The question is this. Tobes, you and I'll throw this around. Give me a breakout player on offense and defense, and give me a disappointer. Sounds a little George W.-ish. Give me a disappointerizer. Give me somebody that doesn't reach expectationals. Somebody that comes up short. He didn't quite reach a goal. Somebody that plays a little worse than we think.
Okay.
Right? Give me a breakout on both sides and a disappointment on both sides.
All right. So we'll start with a breakout, and we'll start on the offensive side of the ball. So the easy one would be Jalen Lane. I could say his name every single time we say breakout guy. I'm not going to do that. We already hashed that out yesterday. I think he's going to be awesome.
What does that look like for you real quick? What, like, awesome means once a month we notice it?
What does it mean? I think by the end of the season, he's their legit number three, potentially 2B to Debo. Like, we always talk 1A, 1B. Mm-hmm. I think he's right there with Debo. Because to me, his skill set reminds me a lot of Debo. Body type are not similar.
I mean, he's not the thumper that Debo is.
No, but he's got more speed. I think he's a little bit shiftier than Debo. Debo's going to run through you. He's also got some shiftiness to him, but he's going to be able to run through you. Jalen Lane isn't going to run over anybody, but I think he has more breakaway speed and is a little bit shiftier. So I could see him being really, really good for this offense. But I could spend all day talking about Jalen Lane as Toki over here.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that I think we're sleeping on a little bit, and it's partially why, when you take a step back and think about that first-round draft pick of Joshua Connerly, I think it helps out, obviously, at the right tackle spot. But Brandon Coleman, I think, is going to be not just a serviceable tackle like he was. Yeah, I think he's going to be not just a serviceable guard now. I think he's going to be really good in there. I think he's going to be able to road grade in the run game. I think he's going to open up some bigger holes than we saw last season. Because I think, you know, when we look back at the end of last year, we blame, oh, it's B-Rob. I think it's a combo of things. I don't think the play calling at times was great with it. I don't think B-Rob was great. I don't think the O-line was great. So everybody can have some of it. I think the O-line is going to be much better. Because they move him inside, I think he's going to be a difference maker. So that'd be my breakout on offense.
I like that one a lot. I think it's a smart one. Because it sets him up in a less challenging role where he's already proven he could play tackle in the NFL. I don't think he was great last year. But for a guy that, you know, half the league or more thought was a guard, mm-hmm. you're thrust in as a left tackle as a third-round pick from minute one, basically. I thought he handled himself pretty well. You would think moving to guard, especially that right guard spot, at least maybe initially, we'll see what happens if and when Sam Cosby comes back, if he has his sea legs underneath him. But that's certainly a great candidate. Jalen Lane's another obvious one. That, to me, is the, you know, if the promise, if the skill set, if the measurables translate into football production. You never know, obviously, with anybody, let alone a fourth-round pick that was available, into the hundreds as people are selecting and they passed him over multiple times. Who knows what the reason for that is? Everyone could be wrong. You could be right. Who knows? I hope that's the case. Having that extra, if you pay too much attention to bleep and bleep, you're getting pwned. Like, or the guy that can keep you honest. I want that. I covet that. I'm desperate for it. So I hope that's the case. To me, Michael Phillips said my answer. Ben Sinnott. And this is going to go with my disappointment on offense, too.
Oh.
So What was the story? What was the thought when Zach Ertz signed here?
Going to train Ben Sinnott how to play to tight end, and he's going to end up being the guy.
He was signed. Remember, he was basically out of football or almost close to it. And I was wrong about Zach Ertz. This was like, I was like, there's no downside to having Zach Ertz around. He could be, a limited catch and fall guy who's going to help your quarterback. Nice little security blanket, veteran dude who's won a whole bunch. Maybe, close to being a Hall of Famer. A really, really good player. No issue with that on a short-term deal. Doesn't cost you very much. Make that signing every time. But, and here was the caveat, he's going to miss a bunch of time. He has been constantly banged up over the last several years. Hasn't lost one step, has lost several, probably five or six, maybe eight steps. In I don't know how many he has to lose. Nothing, not threatening, not going to break any tackles, not going downfield, not going to be explosive at all, ever. Again, still useful, but come on, he's going to miss a bunch of time. Enter Ben Sinnott. That didn't happen last year. He was consistent and, in fact, played better in the second half than he did in the first half in terms of being targeted, catching the football, production, look at the touchdowns, etc. The narrative and the story about Zach Ertz, I still think is the same. It didn't happen last year. I just think we put it off for a season.
Sure.
I think the norm, and again, this isn't me ripping Zach Ertz, because this is egg on my face. I was wrong about what Zach Ertz was going to be, and I was wrong in the first half to beat up on him. But I think he's going to get hurt. I think he's going to slow down. You took a player in the second round where Adam Peters evoked Kyle Juszczyk. Like, that means something to me.
Yeah, and George Kittle.
And when you hear Kittle and Juszczyk, that ain't nothing. I need that. I want that, right? He's more dynamic. Zach Ertz right now is the better player, and that's obvious. I mean, you could see the impact and the import that he had. Every third and four, every, goal to go, narrow situation, that's the guy they're going to. But at some point, dynamic has to win out or has to be a participant. They took that dude in the second round last year, Tubbs. That's my breakout candidate for offense.
Yeah, I love that one because I think of – I was surprised that he wasn't a little more involved at times last year, because there were times when the offense got to a point where they couldn't run the football and it felt hard at times to move the ball. They were still able to do stuff. A lot of it was all dependent on Jaden. And I was curious if you couldn't run some stuff, just simple short stuff to get Sinnott the ball and let him – do stuff after the catch. Because remember, we all got excited in that preseason game. Was it against the Jets? I can't remember who it was against. When he caught the ball and then broke a couple tackles and went for 30, 40 yards. And it was all after the catch. Zach Ertz gives you none of that. Zach Ertz is the better route runner. He understands where to sit down in the zone. He understands leverage against man. There's no question about any of that stuff. You're right about that. But if Ben Sinnott can grow on that a little bit, but also still be dynamic after the catch, I could definitely see him being someone that breaks out this season. My disappointment on the offensive side of the ball, I don't know where you're going to go here. I think we probably both feel about the same on this guy, though. I'm going to go with Brian Robinson. If it's true the way that people have talked, we've asked various people, hey, what's the plan at running back? And they believe in Brian Robinson. Well, I think you're going to get the same thing, maybe even a little bit less out of Brian Robinson. Last year, 187 carries, just under 800 yards, 799, 8 touchdowns. Solid year for him. But I still feel like when we were talking yesterday about what's your pecking order for weapons, number one and number two are Terry and Debo. I wanted a running back to be number three there. And there's not one unless Kroski Merritt turns out to be that guy to me. And so Brian Robinson, yeah, you can turn around and hand him the rock. I'm really not that worried. Like if he ends up with 10 carries a game, fine. If you get Eckler involved, find other stuff. Honestly, it showed enough last year with Jaden being able to get the ball out, protect himself, and improve O-line. If it just means that your run game, that I kind of hate this idea that people throw around all the time, oh, the screen game, the quick game, it's an extension of the run game. I kind of hate that a little bit. I hate when people say that, but I think that might be it because I don't think he's going to have a spectacular season. Is he serviceable? Yes. He's not dynamic, though, and so I think he's going to be a little underwhelming.
I just alluded to mine. I figured you would take Brian Robinson. So my answer is Ertz, and it's not because I'm down on Ertz. I just think, again, looking at the career pattern, he was banged up a bunch, slowed down a bunch, hurt a bunch. I think we got away with it last year, and we're sort of counting on that to continue. I think that's a bit naive. So I think he'll play. I think he'll be helpful. But I do not see another season where he has 66 catches, second most on the team, for 660 yards. I don't see it. I think it ends up being a little bit less than that. Still valuable, still helpful, but that's kind of leads me to my Ben Sinnott conclusion. What do you guys think? 800-636-1067 is the number. 800 636-1067. We've given you breakout and disappointment on offense. We'll do that for defense next. Want to hear from you guys as well. Plus, we got a little bit more on the Capitals in the 5 o'clock hour. I want to ask you guys how you should be feeling after Florida wiped the floor, or the ice, with the team that wiped the floor, or the ice, with Washington. We'll do that at 5. But next, your calls on breakout and disappointment with the Local 53, 800-636-1067.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
G&D on the Fan, Tobes in for Jeeps. We've given you a couple breakout candidates on offense and defense. No, on offense, rather. Giving you a couple guys we think might disappoint on offense. For a breakout, I went with Ben Sinnott. For disappointment, I went with Zach Ertz. Not because I'm down on Zach Ertz. Again, just looking at the career track record, the injuries, we avoided them last year. Older players that are unhealthy don't tend to get healthier as they get older.
Yeah.
Right? It was a freak thing that happened last year. It's awesome. What a year he turned in. I'm not saying I trust it. Your breakout candidate was?
Brandon Coleman, and my disappointment was Brian Robinson.
Let's go to the defensive side of the football. Give me your breakout candidate. A little bit harder here. I mean, if you get counting stats, you know, you could come up with sacks or interceptions for certain guys. But give me somebody that goes from we're not counting on this to plays well.
Javonte Jean-Baptiste. You know, I think that he could be a solid player.
Opportunity will be there, yeah.
Yeah, and look, I don't think he's suddenly going to take Dante Fowler's role and end up with double-digit sacks, but they really just need somebody opposite Dorrance Armstrong that can give them solid play. And I think they have one of those guys. I think that's going to be Dietrich Wise. But we see this with teams all around the NFL. It's not just your starting four defensive linemen that get a lot of play. Like, your other rotational guys are going to get significant play. I think Javonte Jean-Baptiste, when he was on the field last year, was effective. Were his numbers great? No. But I think that he can be someone that has a role for this football team. So I think that he could be a little bit of a breakout because there really are no expectations for him. But I think he could be helpful this season.
My breakout guy is Will Harris. He's going to start at safety. And everybody has already done this where they've gone, well, they've downgraded at safety. They lost Jeremy Chinn. Do you think this team, with these guys in this front office, with this coaching staff, that's got a pretty good grasp, it seems to me, of defensive players and personnel, would just let somebody go out the door and not have a pretty viable, smart, capable candidate that thinks going to fit in their system? I bet you we're singing Will Harris's praises in the first month of the season.
Interesting.
I think that guy starts. I think that guy plays well opposite Quan Martin. I think that guy's going to deliver highlight reel hits. I think that guy's going to be a glorified kind of linebacker plus in the new way the NFL goes, where your box safety is basically now a linebacker on a lot of downs. I think that guy's going to play well in this scheme and system. I think you're going to see him. The same way it felt like you saw Jeremy Chinn, feel like you saw Mikey Sanders still like in on every tackle, right? Always around the ball. I think that's coming for Will Harris. I think that dude is going to end up playing really, really well, and nobody's counting on it.
That's an interesting one. Yeah, I think when you look at they're kind of comparable in some ways. Like, I'm just looking at their PFF grades to get an idea. The numbers are worse for Will Harris, but
absolutely.
Overall grade, 61.5 for Harris. Pass rush grade was a 61. Obviously, he's a safety, so not going to do a ton of that. Run defense was a 63. And coverage was a 60. Jeremy Chinn for run defense was a 72. Coverage was a 66. So slightly down. But for bang for your buck, I do think that he could end up being a nice piece for this defense. My disappointment on the defensive side of the ball, I hate it. I hate to do this. I think it's going to be his final year in Washington. I think Daron Payne.
Yep. I think that's the obvious candidate,
yeah,
right?
I think at this point, the ship has sailed. And we already see the writing on the wall with what happened with John Allen, because John Allen was actually solid last year, I thought. And then, especially when he came back from injury, I thought he was impactful. The last time we saw Daron Payne be impactful was when he was up for a contract, really. He's had some flashes. There have been times where it's like, whoa, Daron Payne for those three plays on that drive was dominant.
Yeah, you remember, there was it the Denver game? It was like a couple years ago. It's sad that you can reference this one sequence, but there was a Daron Payne drive where Denver got nothing because that guy took over for the series, and you go, that's in there somewhere. Why can't we get that more regularly?
Yeah, so I think we're just not going to see that. We'll see flashes from time to time, and don't get tricked. Every single time that we show up to training camp early on, they had their way. John Allen and Daron Payne would always dominate early in camp. Maybe it'll be different because the O-line is slated to be better this year, but don't be surprised if Daron Payne, first couple days of camp, everyone's like, wow, look at how good he is. It happens every year, and then perennially when the actual football starts, it's disappointing. I think it's going to be the end of the road for Daron Payne. He'll be serviceable. He'll be a good starter. He'll help you out, but he's not going to be an impact player like he's paid to be.
So that's there. I think there are a couple candidates here. I mean, just based on what they paid Javon Kinlaw, I don't think you're getting that production. Again, I hope I'm wrong. It would be a kind of a fork in the road for their offseason, really, for this defense. But my answer, it feels like I'm beating the dead horse on this one. I know he's missing OTAs, but it's Lattimore.
Yes.
I'm just not a believer. And the excuse is, hey, he was never 100% last year. He came here, he was hurt, missed more time than everybody thought, and that hamstring injury just kind of kept dragging and dragging and dragging. And I understand it. I tore my hamstring where you can't make it go. It's not a toughness thing. It's not a competitive thing. It's not a desire thing. If you want it to fire and it doesn't fire, there's nothing you can do, right? So I understand maybe that was the main issue. It seemed to me to be beyond that. It seemed to me, just my early feeling, early returns on this, and again, who knows, but that New Orleans got one over, that they got a third, fourth, and a sixth out of it, and we were, at the analogy I used with you yesterday, Tobes, is that we were rowing 2,000 meters, and we got to the 1,700 mark and had a broken oar, and somebody came along and said, hey, man, you want an oar? And we said, well, yeah, we're here. We got a chance to do something pretty cool in this race. We should probably take that oar. It's going to cost you. No, I understand. I'm not worried about it. I'll pay it right now. Now in the fog, that was, in the fog of war. Now that you've got some time to remove, you go, damn, I don't think I would have done that deal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he plays well. I'll shut up. I'll apologize. I'll say whatever I have to say. But I'm not a believer. I just don't think it's going to happen. And now we're kind of starting with this OTAs thing. And I don't know if it's a contract thing. I don't know if it just doesn't feel like it. I don't know what I don't know. It doesn't look good to me. And the vibe isn't good. He didn't play real well. They've got ready-made replacements, be it Sandra Still, Jonathan Jones, Trey Amos. I don't think you do what you did if you go, oh, yeah, that's a lockdown. We're just fine there. I think you've kind of prepared for life with or without him.
Yeah, and I think Michael Phillips on earlier on the Blitz basically said he's not guaranteed a spot out of training camp.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting because the reality is he's not. You'd save $16 million if you just moved him right now and you were done. So he's not guaranteed anything. And you have a chance now. Like, we all say, rookie corners, it takes some time. What if Trey Amos is just awesome right away? Early reports and everything is so early. It's OTAs, but they say he looks fluid, looks solid, looks like he could be someone. But what if he is? And you have Jonathan Jones, who's been solid throughout his career. Mm-hmm. And Sam Ristill's a good corner, showed that he can play outside. He has that versatility. What if it's just like, you know what? It was a nice try. It was a swing and a miss. It's better to have that cap space throughout the season. And he's a net negative on the football field for us. Adios. Like, that's crazy to think that could happen, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. And it might even be something that's a legitimate possibility we'll stare in the face pretty soon.
Yeah, I hadn't considered, until Phillips brought it up, the, training camp time or, after kind of right now. I thought once they went through this beginning of the offseason where they signed who they signed, drafted who they drafted, we weren't going to be in that place where they moved on from him. But maybe that's still on the table. Maybe that's still in the cards. If you come to training camp and it's like, you know what? He ain't moving around that great. The salary part of it is obviously right there at the core of it, right? Where you don't lose very much in terms of a cap hit. You gain a bunch of space. To me, though, my math, my rudimentary brain goes, I use cap space in the offseason. If I'm going to do that, I would have already done it. I would have used that $16 million to go sign one of the better corners that was out there or something else. They didn't. So doing it later didn't occur to me, but I suppose that's a real possibility.
Yeah, I mean, you could move on if he's just a net negative for this football team. And there are still guys that are out there that you could potentially go. I'm not 100% sure that this is fully updated, but it's looking like a Bradbury. I haven't seen him sign anywhere. I think old friend Kendall Fuller is still out there. And if you're looking at it and saying he's going to be maybe our fourth best corner, then yeah, he's not worth it. He's worth having that extra bit of space for the season. Rasul Douglas, Stephon Gilmore. I mean, there's some names out there that you can go get that are going to be less of a headache as well. And the other part about this, too, did they know that he was going to skip OTAs? We'll never know. But if you expected him to be there and he's just not there, it's not helping his case, right? Like, again, it's voluntary. I get all that. You could have just showed up, too. Like, it wouldn't be a problem for you to show up.
Wouldn't it be cool if you just volunteered to show up? Yeah, wouldn't that have been awesome?
You could have been there.
That's Toby. I'm Danny. Grant and Danny here on The Fan. We're not going to break down the Eastern Conference Finals in hockey. I'm not going to give you the line pairings, the Corsi for and against, and all the other type of stuff. But I got something for Caps fans that I've been chewing on for a little bit, and I want to bring that to you next. The bottom line is this. The team that kicked your ass just got their ass kicked. That's what happened. We should be feeling some type of way. We'll do that at 5 on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.